Spirit Radio Podcasts.
The playground yesterday afternoon, it was so lovely to see just so many families with their kids just making the most of their time together. But do you find it hard to kind of get back into this, to the routine, you know, when the, whether it's kids going back at school or perhaps you're going back to work and you've really enjoyed this kind of family time together? It's hard not to be kind of taken over by the January blues. And if you as a parent feel that, then it's going to have a knock-on impact as your, at your, to your children as well. So how do you actually make the most of your family time together? Is it about a kind of particular shift in your attitude when it comes to even things that you might be dreading, like taking down the Christmas decorations? Well, that's what Katrina's going to be talking about today. So Katrina, did you have lots of lovely family time over Christmas?
We had a great time, an absolutely fantastic Christmas day itself was reasonable enough because some family couldn't make it, and I'm in the position now where some of my children are married and have families of their own, and I'm encouraging them to do their own thing. You know, if they enjoy coming back to the family home, or family of origin, as we have to call it now, because there are so many family homes, we're delighted to see them, but to really encourage them to do their own thing. And of course, then they have responsibilities to their in-laws as well. But on Stephen's Day, we had everybody. So we had 18 people around the table. So it was great fun.
18 people. Wow.
Paid for hats and Christmas crackers. And
I hope the cleanup was a shared job.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. They who prepare sit down and put the feet up afterwards.
Well, this is the thing that's difficult, is it's especially for kids as well, you know, when there's so, I certainly found with young cousins and with Matthew playing with his young cousins and family around, he really got into the excitement of it all, and I just marveled just watching these little moments of joy. And then you kind of come back home to the routine, and it's really it's a difficult kind of transition to make. And maybe we as parents then, perhaps when we're off and we're relaxed, we're really giving that kind of quality time to our children where we're sitting down with them. It's just, you know, that one-on-one great time that we're giving them. And then we just very quickly can fall back into that, I'm busy, I have to do this, I have to clean, I have to cut, and we forget what's important.
Yeah. So I would always encourage parents at this time of the year, and I know you have loads of resolutions and a list that, if like me, you are rapidly failing at. And I was nearly mowed down on my way into the studio here by a whole load of joggers jogging round and round the path, you know, and I was kind of going, oh, I suppose I should be doing something like that, but I'm not. So, yes, get out your diary and put a little space in the corner, not for things that you have to do all day, every day on a particular day, but make an agreement with yourself about date nights with your hubby or your wife or whatever. And, you know, do that once a week, and make it sacrosanct between the two of you that this is a time where the two of you are going to be together.
How key is that to parenting in daily life, getting that time together with your spouse?
Oh, it's absolutely vital. It's absolutely vital because your relationship together is the thing that holds the family unit together. The most important thing to your children is your relationship with their father or their mother. That's it. And that is the thing that you have to continuously work at, particularly when you have children, because it's so easy for it to slither away, and so easy for you to begin to see your spouse as your parenting partner rather than the love of your life and the person that you are committed to and the person who is committed to you for the rest of your life.
And how strict would you be, for example, when we do our date nights? I have this joke. Okay, when we're driving to whatever restaurant or wherever we're going, you can talk about the baby then. But once we're there, no more talk of the children. Okay, we just need to talk about us, what's going on, our lives, and just enjoy ourselves.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, the baby talk is going to, you know, and the child talk is going to creep in, you know. And that's okay, because they're such a big part of your life. But you will get round to talking about you if you keep trying to come back to talking about you, how you're doing as a couple. And because obviously the things that are most concerning you, be it your job or the children and all that sort of stuff, is going to come tumbling out first. And that's why you need to do it every week. Because if you were to do it only every fortnight or indeed every month, you would never get down to you, because all these things would be foremost in your mind and they would be the things that would be exercising you most. And very often you are running along a parallel line with your spouse, and it isn't until the rubber hits the road that you realise that you actually haven't talked about each other for a long, long time.
Or just whatever important issues are going on. I don't know how many times that my mother has said to me, oh, have you talked to Carl about such and such, you know, an important issue? And I said, we've been like ships in the night this week. I know, it's an important thing. It's 5 days later. Yeah. And that can happen. Okay, so we've got our date night. We're doing well. But then reality sets in and we got to take down the Christmas decorations. But you think that even that can be fun?
It can be fun. Any project that you're doing with your children, you need to keep saying to yourself, well, I need to keep saying to myself, what is the purpose of this exercise? And if it's something that I've decided to do with the children, a project that I've decided to do with the children, the purpose of it is to spend time with the children. The purpose of it is not to get every single decoration wrapped and put away pluperfectly. Okay, I may even have to, by when they go to bed, I may
redo
even have to turn down and redo some of it and all that kind of thing, you know. So if you keep that in your foremost in your mind, and I have found that to be a lifesaver, whatever I'm doing, if I'm baking a cake with them, which I'm going home to do now, I'm going to bake one of my a birthday cake for my daughter with my grandchildren. That's going to be interesting.
There'll be flour everywhere.
There will be flour everywhere, and there will be eggs falling on the floor, you know, instead of in the bowl and all that. But it doesn't matter, because this is time that I am spending with them. That's the purpose of the whole exercise. And the cake will be made at some stage. It may even get made with them and into the oven. So if you are doing your taking down the Christmas decorations later on, that the purpose of it is to be with them, spend some time with them, and to encourage them, to love them, to let them know they're doing a good job. And if things go a little bit wrong, that with patience, you try to encourage them to do a little bit better. And I find it very difficult to do that if I haven't already had a little pep talk with myself, to tell myself, this is an opportunity for me to make a memory with my children. Mm. And I have been surprised at the things my children have played back to me as being very memorable, whereas I might have thought it was whole load of rubbish.
Like doing the Christmas decorations.
Do you remember when we unpacked all the Christmas decorations and we did, and wasn't it great? And I just absolutely loved it. And we put all the Christmas decorations tidily together. And I'm kind of thinking, Janie Mac, I think my memory of putting away the Christmas decorations is slightly different to yours.
So it's about finding the joy in the everyday and also having a little bit of patience, you know, because it's going to take longer, but just...
That's it. Know. As long as you... Excellent point, Wendy. As long as you realise this is not going to be done quickly, okay? Anything that gets packed away and put away, or any part of the bed that gets made, or any part of the hoovering that happens with the help of my children is a bonus.
What do you do if there's a meltdown halfway through? So I'm picturing it's all going great and the kids are putting away the baubles, and then one of them halfway, I don't want to do it anymore, and just loses the plot.
Okay. All right. Well, you know, it depends on how far in it is. But if it's about 10 or 15 minutes in, maybe it's time for a break. you know, and we can all sit down and we can all have a drink and we can all have a little treat or something or other. And it may be, depending on the child's age, that 10 minutes is as much as you're going to get out of it. And again,
you have to be realistic then.
And yeah, and then again, you kind of have to say to yourself, okay, well, you know, we got 10 minutes work done. The hope was to spend some time together and maybe get some stuff packed away. And you then kind of have to admit to yourself, this is not going to be the fairy tale ending that I had hoped. I often feel my life is very much like the lads on the road to Emmaus, you know, sort of, we had hoped. And I so often go to bed thinking, well, I had hoped that this is
but
what was going to happen.
You tried your best.
But, you know, you do, again, what is the purpose? You know, people are running around the whole world trying to figure out what is our purpose? What are we here for? What are we created for? And as a parent, you know your purpose is to care for these little ones. You know, they are. I used to sometimes kind of go into an agony of a guilt and all that sort of stuff. And I'd be kind of thinking, oh, golly, should we be giving more to the poor? And, you know, should we be doing, you know, all this, that and the other? And I remember my very wise husband saying to me, our children are the poorest of the poor. They have nothing, you know, they so and we have to feed them. We have to clothe them. But above all, we have to bring them up in the knowledge of God, which is going to be their backbone for the rest of their life. And we have to bring them up in the knowledge that we love them and that they are cherished, they are beloved, and we want to steer them and guide them. And that's your purpose. That's your purpose.
We got to always remember that.
You know?
As always, Katrina, thank you so much for great parenting advice and also general family advice. Get that date night in the calendar. Do it now and don't put it on the long finger. It's so important for you and your family. Well, maybe you have signed up for a gym this January, or it's just on one of your New Year's resolutions to get a little bit fit, maybe lose a bit of weight, and that's obviously a really good thing. But often, I don't know if you've had this experience, I certainly have, in the gym, it's absolutely rammed in January, and come February, it gets a little bit quieter again. In other words, we set goals for ourselves and then perhaps we set them at too high a standard and then they're hard to achieve. So on the line to give us advice on not just getting back on track and setting goals, but realistic fitness resolutions, we have Dirk van der Vleer, the chairman of Gym Plus. Dirk, good morning to you.
Morning, Wendy, and Happy New Year to you.
And to you too. So how's the gym? Is it very busy now that it's January?
Yeah, it's starting to pick up, everyone. Like, I even found myself lying in bed this morning and said, okay, I'm going to get up now and I'm going to do 10 press-ups and I'm going to do that stretch. And we all have this. It's great, though. It's great to have the slate clean and feel like there's a new start. So that's the good thing about the new year, I suppose.
Is that the way that you kind of look at it from that perspective? Because I think a lot of people go through a phase of feeling very guilty about, you know, not exercising over the Christmas season, eating too much, all that sort of stuff. And it's hard to get going. Is that the first step? Is just to do something?
Well, it's getting going, but it's also knowing yourself. So like inside of us, like if we really are honest and we understand our personality, you know, like there's the relaxed Dirk that wants to take it easy, have maybe a cake with a coffee and not do too much exercise and walk. And then there's this, you know, fit bunny rabbit that wants to charge around the place and be super fit and look in the mirror. And it's managing the tension between those two personalities because they are in us. Like you can't always live at full throttle training all the time. And so it's, so you got to understand that we're both that is in us. So by the end of January, the more relaxed guy will say, do you know something? You don't have to do it every day. Why not just miss a day or two? And he's probably right. So it's getting the balance between it all and trying to work a plan that's realistic.
So in other words, say, for example, Dirk, someone who hasn't done the gym thing before, to say, I'm going to go to the gym four times a week. That's probably not a realistic goal, does it?
No, I think try to keep myself reasonably fit, and I think 3 days is plenty, you know, and you just got to manage the routine. You got to try to find something that's flexible, you know, vary the routine. So like I love running and I love running. So it's not an effort for me, but I find the guys come into the gym and say, listen, Dirk, you need to, you know, why don't you try rowing for a day or swimming a bit and trying to mix it up a little bit so that you get a more balanced a more balanced view of the, of just, and you keep it fresh, so it's not, it doesn't get boring, because actually it can be boring exercise in a way, and it's good if you have a goal. I can remember once I had a goal of doing a marathon, and so for 6-8 months I worked towards this marathon. But once I'd done the marathon, like, what are you going to do then? Do you know? And you got to, so it's having a realistic thing. And I suppose the other thing is, you could look at, so people look at the looking well, or you know, even being able to, not as much about your weight, but being feeling good about yourself. And sure, that's diet. 60% of that is what you eat. Do you know, if you're cramming yourself with sugars or different things like that, that's not going to help. You know, so 60% would be diet. You've got to get a good sleep and a bit of exercise, and you've got to learn to relax too. So there's a, it's not just all about exercise. There's lots of little varied to make it, put it in more of a holistic point of view, do you know?
You need all those things to make work. I think sleep is probably one that people don't think about. They might think about food and exercise. How important is it to get a good rest at night?
Well, the old medical people will tell you, but you can't. You can go a long time on depleted sleep, but eventually you're just wearing yourself out. So the good sports people will know, I need to get so many hours of sleep. They practice on that. They put the phone away for the hour and a half, so all screen time it goes, television time, try to relax, get themselves into, and then try to get a good sleep. And they measure it. You know, am I getting good sleep? And because you need that rest time. Otherwise, you just like, and that's one of the things that catches up with us at Christmas. You know, we've worked our really hard all the way up to Christmas, and then suddenly we stop and we're shattered. And that's because it's all catching up. And that's why that nice Christmas fell beautifully this year. You know, it's a good bit of a break. So, and then the other thing I'd say with which a good little hint, I was struggling to lose a bit of weight years ago, and my son said to me, Dad, write down everything you eat. You know, so I had a little note on my phone, and I'd write down, you know, that chocolate bar or that cake. And of course, when you analyse that at the end of the day, you can see it.
Were you kind of shocked then? Were you kind of, especially, you know, a lot of people might be able to retell you without writing down, okay, this is what I had for breakfast, lunch and dinner, but it's the little, well, for me,
yeah,
anyway, like the naughty snacks in between.
I love to sneak off at 11 o'clock and have a coffee, and then there's always a nice little flapjack or something like that. And that's probably relatively harmless. But when I get into my chocolate cakes, I'm probably maybe overdoing it. So when you write it down, and it's good to have a treat. So like a treat is good. Like there's nothing wrong with having a treat. It's just not having them every day. And what I found by writing it down, and I also wrote down then the exercises I do. So went for a run, went for a swim, did a row. You know, so my dogs are my greatest asset. Like I have two dogs. They look for a walk in the morning and the evening. And you know, it's just the walk. And it's not always about the gym. So I go into town, I'd get off the stop earlier and walk, you know, get off the Lewis to stop early and walk that extra bit, or and have a bit of time to think.
And so you're getting more than just the benefit of exercise. You're getting a bit of kind of quiet time as well. How important is it, Dirk, to have somebody that you're kind of sharing your goals with? Because I don't know about you, but if I'd kind of just said to myself, oh, I'm going to, you know, go to the gym 2 or 3 times a week, if I'm not accountable to someone else, it's a lot harder.
Yeah, it is a lot harder. And I used to, so the one thing, and I try to replicate it in the gyms where I can, but I miss, when I played rugby, I had Tuesday and Thursday night, I had practice, and then we played in the weekend. And I go to the practices because I didn't want to let the lads down. And you'd end up doing press-ups and sit-ups and all your different things, but there'd be guys watching you, you'd do it, and the camaraderie and the community is what makes it a fun thing to do. And so we try to create in the gyms, we try to create that community where it's a fun thing. You meet up in a class, you meet people that are doing similar things to you, but you can do that outside the gym. Like I have a friend that I'd ask, you know, I want you to ask me this question, you know, and it'll be related to, you know, watching TV too late at night, you know, how I'm doing fitness-wise, you know, am I taking a break? Just to be a little bit accountable, but a voluntary, I like the voluntary accountable, as in you pick someone that you like and matches you, as opposed to, you know, the legalistic boss or something like that that's going to be on to you the whole time.
Someone who's going to support you, basically, even
yeah,
when you've
yeah,
failed.
And encourage you. And then it's fun. And then it becomes, and then you do your, whatever you do, and you can have your joint treat together and stuff like that. So I think it's making a bit of fun out of it. And it's kind of, And like, as you get older, so like, I'm not impressed, I'm going to be 56 next week. But as we get older, I had this wonderful analogy where I saw that flexibility and loss of power once you get into your 50s are the issues. You know, if you can keep flexible and you don't lose your power. But if you, so I had a guy show us that, you know, he got someone to piggyback on his back, a light guy, about half his weight on his back, and he carried him around. And he said, that's what it's like when you lose 50% of your power. You know, so try to walk to the end of the garden with your grandkids, or try to do all those different things with that extra. So there's not just the exercise, it's keeping your flexibility, being able to touch your toes, all those different things, and keeping a bit of power, which means doing a little bit of those exercises that we wouldn't normally do. But that's where a good fitness person will say, listen, this is the type of exercise to do, and keep doing them.
And I think that's a really important point to make, Dirk, is that, okay, so you could have lots of different types of people. You could have someone, say, starting in your gym who's never done the gym thing before and they need help, or they might enjoy, for example, a boxing class or an aquafit class or something like that. But it's, yes, is it about choosing the right exercise for you? And then, or it can be somebody like, I mean, as you mentioned, you know, as you get that little bit older, or maybe someone like me who's pregnant or whatever, that things change in your life. So therefore, sometimes your exercise regime has to change.
Yeah, and you've got to get that rhythm of grace. I love the way the message translates. The my burden is easy. Learn from me is like learn to live by the rhythms of God's grace. And like you need to find the rhythm of what's going on in your life at that particular time and go with it and stop trying to force it. If you force it, you get injured. Do you know, like it's inevitable. If you continually have the bow bent, if you're continually striving. It's just not healthy for us. Like we're made to have rest. We're made to have to go within the thing. It's a hard thing to get the balance right. You have to get the. I heard a wonderful quote the other day that a warrior sees everything that happens in life as a challenge, whereas an ordinary man sees everything as a blessing or a cursing. And I'm thinking, oh, I don't know. Is it better to be a warrior or an ordinary man? And actually, sometimes it's better to. Life just brings its thing, and you've got to accept it. And sometimes you've got to say, no, I'm going to make a change here. And so you've got to go with the grace of what's there for it.
Yeah, which is really good advice. Maybe just a final piece of advice, Dirk, for people who are listening to this. Okay, I'm motivated. I'm going to set some goals. I'm going to work on my diet, my sleep, and have a kind of buddy who's going to help me. But what's your advice for those people who want to actually make the goal but keep it?
Keep it, yeah. Well, write it down. Make a commitment. Like try to make a commitment, try to work with. So the buddy thing is really helpful. The wife or husband is very helpful, a good friend, and work together. So like I'll say to my wife, I said, listen, I'm off treats and I'm off wine for January to start with anyway. And I'm thinking, help me, you know, help me take the treats out of the house, you know, so the crisps will go. And so you need people to help you and your work colleagues. And then you make it a team thing because everyone is working on something. And you just try to keep working with it. And the other thing is, when you have a blowout where you go and you have that cake and a chocolate bar or whatever it is, that's not the end of the world. You know, like, and that's the problem when people give up. They think, I didn't do anything for a week, or I get sick, or I get really busy at work, and then they find it hard to get back in again. But there's nothing harm about just, like that's the whole thing about living under God's grace. You know, like we can say, okay, that's done, I'm good, but today I can move on from here. And it's allowing yourself to move on and forgetting what's behind. That's very helpful in maintaining a goal and continuing to push on, because you'll always have setbacks. You'll always have things that you've got to go to that'll interfere with your regime, and that's life. But be easy on yourself.
Very good advice, Dirk, and I love that you're connecting up our fitness and New Year's goals up with faith as well. Thanks for joining us on the programme this morning. That's Dirk van der Vleer from Gym Plus. If you want to check out Gym Plus, their website is gymplus.ie. Really fab website, by the way, and details of loads of different cool classes, things that I'd love to try that I've haven't tried before, like aquafit and fitball and all this sort of stuff. Time now for our weekly Life in 5 interview, where we get to talk to someone about their life, its ups and downs, and how they might have seen God working it all. And it's really simple. We give them a list of 5 questions and they choose from a short list. And it's actually lovely for me because our next guest is an author who I interviewed, I think, last year about her most recent book, which is called The Summer Visitors. And usually what happens is when I have authors in is that I get their book and it's ages and ages before I get a chance to read it, and then I don't see them to tell them about it. So it's been great to tell Fiona this morning that I really enjoyed the book, and I certainly highly recommend her latest piece of work, which is called The Summer Visitors. It's lovely to have with us in studio author Fiona O'Brien. Good morning and Happy New Year, Fiona.
Good morning and same to you. Thank you for having me.
So tell us a little bit about yourself.
I'm an author. I've written 7 novels, and before that I was in advertising, so the words have always sort of been part of my life. I found myself after 15 years or so looking for more than sort of 3 lines of copy and a
so
jingle.
You obviously you liked writing, you knew you had a flair for it, but taking that step to write the first book was probably scary.
It was huge and writing can be quite isolating as a career, so you know there's a lot of self-doubt there, but I got lucky and I got a lot of help from people, and then I got published and the rest was sort of history.
The rest is history. 7 books later.
7 books later, yes.
Right, well, I'm sure a lot of your work and your writing will be connected to many of your questions. So the first one that you chose is how God helps you in your work.
Yeah, well, that's important because I have this little routine. I have a prayer that I was given by some friends of mine in the Poor Clare Sisters, which is a prayer to the Holy Spirit. And I put that on my desk, on my computer, and I say that before I start anything. And sometimes when I'm really stuck, I just say, look, I can't find the words, but you can. I can't do this, but you can. And so far, fingers crossed, so far, it's never let me down.
And it's interesting probably when you're writing something, because, I mean, books, when people are totally engrossed, and they really have the power to make people think about life and faith and
yes,
God.
Yes, you should be absorbed in a book. If you're not, there's something wrong.
So you need, I would imagine there's great freedom and that, but pressure as well, thinking, wow, something I write could make somebody think about, say, for example, faith again.
Yes, I don't think you think like that too much when you're writing. If it's going well, the characters should be carrying you along. But yes, you know, certainly elements like that will come up.
So where do you see God in everyday life, Fiona?
For me, that's easy. That's nature. I have 2 dogs and I walk a lot, and there is all the other stuff, but I just find I'm blown away by the creativity in nature, and you know how just this amazing, amazing creative source. And there's just even one simple little walk that leads down by the river between Sandymount, where I live, and up to Bulls Bridge, and there's about 5-10 minutes. But the amount of wildlife you see there, you know, you can see a heron or 2 tucked away waiting to pounce on their next lunch. There's squirrels, there's birds, those ducks, those beautiful swans that you can watch while they literally sit on their eggs. And I followed the cygnets all along until they're, you know, adult swans. But it's just incredible, incredible wildlife, just right in the city centre.
Yeah,
know?
I often think with nature and some of the kind of natural wonders of the world, and even just something like that, as simple as walking down a short little path with your eyes open.
Yes,
or I loved watching the robins over Christmas, you know.
Yeah, look around you.
How perfect nature is,
yes.
You know, when
now,
we don't
I know we're meant to see see God and people. I find that a little harder sometimes.
We got to work on that one a bit
yeah,
more,
we
don't
have to
we?
Work on that one.
Your next question is have you ever seen a miracle?
Yes, well, I had my own little miracle, as I call it, and it was a very, very fast answer to prayer that meant a lot to me at the time. And basically, I had been clowning around in London, and I took off my not reasonably high heels to chase a taxi. And the next thing, I felt this sharp pain in my leg and I sort of tumbled over. And I didn't think too much about it. I thought I'd pulled a muscle. But nonetheless, I arrived home in a wheelchair. And I then went to my physiotherapist, and she had a feel of it and correctly said, I don't like this. I think there's a hole in it. I didn't know what that meant. And I said, what do you mean? She said, I think you'll need surgery. And I said, should I go to my doctor? And she said, if I were you, I would go straight to casualty, which was good advice. She was absolutely right. Went to casualty, and a reasonably elderly man saw me. He wasn't a junior doctor, you know, he was experienced, and he examined me and he said, no, she was right to send you down, but you've just pulled a muscle. Here's a pair of crutches, off you go. And this is where it all goes horribly wrong. So I drive down to Kerry, which is a long drive. I'm down there I was writing at the time for 6 weeks. This thing isn't getting any better. I'm in agony. I'm putting frozen peas on it every night, etc., etc. Come back to Dublin, go to my GP. And to be fair, he says, I don't know, but let's send you for a scan. Went for an MRI scan, and it was in the early days when you had to pay for them. This is about 10 years ago. And I knew I was in trouble when the radiographer came out, and he looked very serious, and he shook his head, and he just looked up at me and said, you have done an awful lot of damage here. And I said, well, what are you talking about? Well, I knew. And he said, oh, you've ruptured your Achilles tendon. You need to get this seen to ASAP. So that was fair enough. I went back to my GP. I said, send me, because I knew I was in trouble at this stage. I said, send me to the guy the sports people go to, or the girl. You know, I don't care what it takes. So he sent me to someone who was a physician, who recommended a surgeon friend of his. And this chap, I'll never forget it, saw me and said, the honeymoon time for this injury is 7 to 10 days. You're 6 weeks down the line. I can't.
You've left it too long, basically.
Basically. And yeah. I said, what are you saying? Are you telling me I'm going to be left with a permanent limp? And he shrugged and said, maybe. And I said, well, is there even any point in me having this operation? And he shrugged again. So I left his office and I went home and I cried for about 3 hours.
Feeling quite desolate,
because my mother had been an invalid from something totally, but I know what it's like to, walk around with a limp or have a limp. And then I thought, this is ridiculous. I'm a praying person. I'm not taking this. So I got on to my favourite saint, who is Saint Anthony. And people think of him for just last things, but don't forget, he can find you anything. So I said, find me a surgeon. And I looked him up online, and funnily enough, one of his best miracles, or well-known ones, which I hadn't heard of, was he reattached a severed foot to a villager, because this kid had come to him in confession and said he'd kicked his mother. And St. Anthony said, speaking metaphorically, better you cut off your own foot than kick your mother. And the villagers came running back to him in consternation, because this kid had cut off his foot, and he prayed over him and he reattached it. So I said to him, look, I said, if you can reattach a foot, what's a nitty bitty tendon? So we arranged the price, and this is very, very pertinent with St. Anthony. And I find if you're really desperate, if you pay half up front, it gets an even quicker result. So I decided on quite a lot of money, because I was prepared to travel to find this surgeon. So I also think, pray to God, sailor, but row for the shore. I rang a friend of mine, a sort of acquaintance from years ago, who I knew was in respiratory medicine. And I explained the predicament. And he said, look, he said, leave it with me. I should be bumping into someone in a couple of days. I'll find out who the best person, wherever the world
is.
So
you were on an investigative journey, basically, to find the right person.
So, when I say the phone rang not 5 minutes later, and this was the same person, and said, extraordinary thing happened. This guy I was hoping to meet in a couple of days, I bumped into him the minute I walked downstairs. And I told him what you had been through. And he said, first of all, he said, that surgeon is a hip and a hand guy. He shouldn't have even been talking about taking you on for soft tissue. I asked him, who is the best person in Europe for this operation? And he smiled and said, that would be me. He saw me the next day and he operated on me the following morning. Now, I was in plaster for 2 months up to mid-thigh, which was hard, but I would have been in full body plaster if it had fixed it. And, here I am 10 years
later. Not limping around.
Not a bother, not a limp, not nothing. And that was a miracle. I mean, I had been told 6 weeks is, footballers, when they snap a tendon, I mean, they're rushed to hospital. It's a big deal. And I had been walking around on this thing for 6 months, and the elasticity is lost in the tendon, and it also travels back up your leg like a piece of elastic. So I was, as far as I'm concerned, I got my miracle.
St. Anthony found you the right surgeon, by the sounds of it. We must remember that now. It's not just to find lost things, find the right people.
I'm a big fan of St. Anthony.
Very good. It's a fantastic, and thank God you're walking fabulously, yeah. Fiona. Your fourth question is a testing time in your life.
Oh, gosh. That would have to be my marriage breakdown, which was many years ago now. But I couldn't have anticipated how it would affect me. And this sounds like it wasn't so much the dramatic love aspect. It was, I couldn't believe this was happening to me. And this is what I think often happens in life with God. You sometimes need to be broken down before you can grow and be put back together again, or grow as a person. And I just couldn't, I went into marriage thinking, I will never be divorced. It won't be me. It's not going to happen to me. 2.5 years later. I mean, it was that sudden, and it was that. And I knew after 6 weeks of marriage, I was in big trouble. And I struggled for 2.5 years. I obviously don't want to go into too many details, but the marriage was annulled, and it had a really bad effect on me. I lost trust in myself. I lost trust in beginning another relationship. It took...
What about your faith?
Yes.
The testing time for your faith as well?
It was a very testing time for my faith.
Looking back on it now, you know, oftentimes, thank God, sometimes one of some of the most difficult times in our lives, sometimes we're able to say, okay, I can see the good that was brought out of that. When you look back now,
I think it's important to remember that just because you have a strong faith doesn't mean your life's going to go easily. That's not to say it won't either, but that's the journey of life, and that's
it will have ups and downs.
Yeah,
God's not a wizard or a magician.
You don't know what's around the corner, but you have to trust and keep the faith, as they say.
The last question for Fiona O'Brien, who's my Life in 5 guest today, is one thing that most people wouldn't know about you.
Well, certainly they wouldn't know my death row meal would be a Big Mac and chips. And on a more pertinent level, I don't think people would realise how important my faith is to me, because it's not something you talk about, except I'm talking about it now and obviously with other people.
Do you find that hard in the kind of writing world, you know?
And No, I don't, because the older I get, the more I am speaking out about it.
You're more confident.
I think it's important to speak out about it if you have it, not in a preachy way, but just... How you live your life
in a normal kind of natural way.
Yeah.
Do you find you're kind of in the industry of authors, is there kind of pressure put on authors, you know, write certain styles or things like that?
No, I don't think so. I think there's trends, like there is in every sort of business, like the music business and that, and that, you know, there can be a flavor or a crime can be, for instance, very popular, and then romance can be popular, or then, you know, now at the moment apparently uplifting fiction is what people are looking for. So there is that kind of market pressure that there is in any industry.
There you go. You're off to write an uplifting book for 2019, Fiona. I'm sure there's a book probably in all the answers to the questions that you've given us today. Thanks so much for being our Life in 5 guest this morning. I've been chatting to author Fiona O'Brien. It's lovely to have you back in Spirit Radio. And Fiona's latest book is called The Summer Visitors. I have read it and I highly recommend it. New abortion law kicked in on Tuesday, even though there was many, many concerns that rushing in abortion could cause serious risks to women. There was many concerns coming across the board from obstetricians, from doctors, from midwives, but it has gone ahead. A new helpline for women seeking an abortion was opened yesterday. Paul Cullen of the Irish Times reports that around 20 women sought terminations on the first day the termination was available from the My Options helpline service and through their GP. And just in terms of GPs, there's 3,500 GPs out of that, 186 have signed up to provide abortion services on the line. To comment on what this means now that the legislation and the new law is in place, what does it mean for the Irish healthcare sector? What does it mean for Irish women, maternity hospitals, and indeed our GPs? We have Eilish Mulroy from the Pro-Life campaign to comment. Eilish, good morning.
Good morning, Wendy. Thanks for having me on the programme.
So it seems the first port of call for women who find themselves experiencing an unplanned pregnancy is this My Options helpline service. It's called My Options, but is it really just giving the option of abortion?
Well, we simply don't know what's being said on the helpline right now. It's being very widely publicised on radio. The first result in a Google search for abortion this morning. So it's been widely publicised. Our grave concern would be that when women ring the helpline, that they will be only given and sent in a direction towards abortion and not given all of the information that they should be given when they're experiencing an unplanned pregnancy. I'd love to think, and we'd love to think, that there would be some emphasis and on positive options like adoption, information on what kind of supports and what kind of social welfare entitlements women would receive if they keep their baby. And, you know, it's very concerning that throughout the course of the campaign and throughout the course of the recent Dáil debates, the Minister for Health, Simon Harris, was repeatedly praising the Irish Family Planning Association and other organisations, when we know that these are organisations that primarily are interested in promoting abortion. And that's been found with the IFPA in particular in the past in an investigation, that they were giving poor advice to women and life-endangering advice. What we would be hoping is that this helpline would also give women information on the positive options, because that would be what women deserve. They deserve to have all of the information And if you remember, Wendy, throughout the course of the Dáil debate, the minister opposed amendments that would give women full information before abortion. That's very, very concerning. And hopefully the helpline will be a little bit better than that.
What would you say, though, Eilish, to people who'd say, you know, the positive here is that, you know, women who are calling this helpline, they would have been, as the phrase we've heard so many years, the problem would have been exported. Is it better now that abortion is available here?
There was always information available on abortion for women through the internet, through online availability. There was always that information. But the reality with the helpline is that women who are ringing a helpline in unplanned pregnancy, they're upset, they're vulnerable, they may not have a partner to support them, they may not have family to support them. They deserve to get all of the information. And simply sending them on one route towards abortion, when we know there are many, many women for whom abortion has had a very negative impact on their lives, is simply not doing them the service that they deserve. They deserve to have all of the information. And look, it is true that the law has changed, that we now have abortion in the country. But this week and Tuesday, when this law came into effect, will be remembered in years to come as a day when we truly abandoned authentic human rights. Voters were lied every step of the way during this referendum campaign by those who support abortion. And that will become very apparent.
What do you think they were lied to about in particular? What was the thing that you think voters were misled on?
Well, for example, we hear all the time about abortion being healthcare. Ending the life of an unborn child intentionally is not healthcare. Not giving a woman the healthcare she needs and deserves, not giving her the information that she needs and deserves, that's not healthcare. It is a law built on a lie. It will not make Ireland a more compassionate place, as some suggest. And we only have to look at the way in which the Minister for Health and the government party responded to attempts to introduce humane amendments throughout the Dáil and Shannon debate. They refused to accept amendments to provide pain relief for an unborn baby during late-term abortion. That is barbaric. And that shows that this is a law that doesn't show even as much as a hint of mercy for unborn babies and does a grave disservice to their mothers.
Eilish, why do you think so few GPs have actually signed up to provide abortion? I mean, if we're going off that the majority of people voted for abortion, surely then the majority of GPs would feel the same, yet just 187 out of 3,500 have actually signed up to provide the service.
Well, look, GPs are medical professionals that entered medicine to save lives, not take lives. And it's no surprise that they don't want to sign up to it. And in fact, to suggest that GPs should be forced to participate in the abortion process in any way at all is simply incredible. And it's another area where amendments were rejected by the minister, where the true freedom of conscience for doctors who don't want to participate is not protected. But we're not just talking about doctors here either. We're also talking about nurses, midwives, students, and indeed other healthcare workers who will be expected at some level to be involved in this process. That's simply wrong, to force people against their conscience to participate in the ending of human life when they entered the profession to save lives. It's no surprise at all that more GPs haven't opted into the service. And, you know, I have no doubt that in terms of the freedom of conscience issue, we've seen where in other countries court cases have been taken to against legislation like this. And I've no doubt that there are people in this country already contemplating such actions here.
In terms of, I suppose, what do you feel the effect might be on the culture of the Irish healthcare sector? You know, I'm thinking of a woman who, for example, might go and have their 20-week scan, you know, the big scan, as it's called. And if there is a problem with the baby, you know, what happens next in Irish maternity hospitals?
Well, I mean, that was already a concern, to be frank. There was already a situation where people who had tough, challenging diagnoses at the 20-week scan were being told by doctors that they could travel, which was a euphemistic term, to go abroad for abortion. So that there will be situations, and those parents, some of them will say that they felt pressure to travel to have the abortion in England. So there's no doubt that that same situation will arise now, and even more so, where people will be nearly expected to take particular course of action if they're given a poor diagnosis of a 20-week scan. There's no question that once you introduce abortion, you're undermining the care that for mother and baby and from doctors, and you're undermining the culture across all of the hospitals. Now, it is, you know, there is, it is clear, there's a lot of spin about how many hospitals are opting in or are initiating abortion services. I have no doubt that there are a lot of doctors and a lot of obstetricians in the hospitals in our country who want nothing to do with this. And the hope would be that they will speak up more against this inhumane legislation and, you know, fulfill their obligation, which is to save lives of both mother and baby and not end lives.
What would be your final, I suppose, thoughts, Eilish, for people who are listening, the 1 in 3 people who voted to keep the Eighth Amendment, who, as New Year's Day dawned, they felt very desolate. They feel, look, as you said, this law has been passed. It's what people voted for. We have abortion in Ireland. Do people just need to kind of get on with it now?
Well, what we'd be saying is, look, obviously the pro-life movement is deeply saddened at what has happened to our country and this unjust law that came into force on Tuesday. And we're deeply saddened about the loss of life that's going to inevitably result from it. But we will fight on peacefully but ceaselessly to expose the barbarism of this law, to expose the lies that were told during the referendum campaign. And we look forward to a brighter day at some point in the future when unborn babies will again be welcomed in life and their mothers and protected in law.
Eilish Mulroy of the Pro-Life Campaign, thanks so much for joining us on the programme.
Thanks for listening to our Spirit Radio podcast. Don't miss out. Subscribe today. Find out how at spiritradio.ie.